Deswegen Parshat Korach. It's the famous story about a dispute between Korach, 250 other people of the Jewish nation, and three more against Moshe and Aaron. The people who argued against of Moshe and Aaron, Korach and his people, were very, very high-level people. Like many, many stories in the book of Bamidbar, we speak with people who are on a high level that is beyond our grasp. And it's very hard to understand the facts based on the fact that we recognize their greatness. Even though they were very, very great people, they ended up in a very difficult death, with a very supernatural difficult death. As we know, Earth opened up its mouth and miraculously swallowed all of them and all that belongs to them. And it's a very bewildering story. How did it happen that people of such greatness ended up in such a horrible way? And even though Moshe tried to make them realize that what they do is wrong, he was not successful, and he had to ask Hashem to punish them, what is very atypical for Moshe. Usually, even when the Jewish people committed sins, in other stories in the book of Bamidbar, Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for them and Hashem forgave. Here, he's not praying for them and he doesn't ask for forgiveness. Instead, he's asking for a very unusual death, and Hashem complies with it and does it. So, what happened here? How do people of this greatness, of this level, end up in such a way, even though they have leaders like Moshe and Aaron? What's doing here? Now, the question becomes much bigger when we refer to another detail in the story. When the Torah starts to tell us about this machloket, this argument, this conflict, the Torah says as follows, and it's on page 821. The Torah mentions who are the people who are involved. And the Torah says, Korach, son of Izhar, son of Kehat, son of Levi, separated himself. So he separated himself from Moshe, Aaron, from the other people, right? With Datan and Aviram. These are two other people that we know their history. It's not the first conflict between them and Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, the first time that Moshe came out to see his people while still being in the palace of Pharaoh, he went to see their suffering and feel with them. It's written that he saw two people fighting with each other, and one of them raising his hand to hit the other. And Moshe said, Rasha, lama ta kerecha? Wicked person, why are you going to hit the other? And we are told it's Datan and Aviram. So that's the first interaction between Moshe and Datan and Aviram. Here, they are again against Datan and Aviram, and these are not the only two places. So it's Korach, it's Datan and Aviram, sons of Eliab, and On, son of Pelet. And then in the next pasuk, we are told about 250 more people that we'll soon address. On ben Pelet is singled out here. He was from the tribe of Reuven, and he was among the people who were arguing against Moshe and Aaron, mainly Moshe, but Moshe and Aaron. And there is a famous chazal that tells us that from all the people who were involved in this machloket, in this dispute, On ben Pelet was the one that was rescued, and it's very, very famous. I want to read to you what the Midrash tells us about it. Okay, so the Midrash tells us the following. Amra lo ishto shel On ben Pelet, the wife of On ben Pelet told him, I Aaron kehana atalmido. What all the people wanted was to become Kohanim or Leviim, but to change their position. Korach was a Leviat. He was one of those people who carried the ark, the Aron, when the Jewish people traveled in the desert, which is a very high position, but he wanted to become a Kohen. Okay? So the wife of Ron Ben Pelle told him, what does it matter for you if Aharon will be the Kohen or if Korach will be the Kohen? No matter who will be the Kohen, you will remain the student of them. You will not be a Kohen because they are very, very great people. Korach is a very great person. He, in fact, was so holy that he was chosen to carry the ark. And our sages tell us that the ark could not take any person close to him who had even one sin, which indicates to us that Korach was totally pure of any wrongdoings. He was already 130 years at this stage, and still he did not perform any sin. This was his level. So she told him, you know, him maybe will get his wish and will become the high priest, but you are not on this level. And why are you getting involved in an argument that you will not gain anything from? So he told her, but I made a commitment. Korah spoke to people, and people made commitments to join him. So I have to keep my commitment. So she told him, leave it to me. And she was a married woman. She took off her head covering and sat at the entrance of her tent, understanding that when the people will come to call him to join them, and they will see her with hair that is not covered, they will not come in. They will pass by and will let Ron Ben Pelle alone. And obviously, it's not right for a married woman to take off her covering, but she felt that under these circumstances, that's the right thing to do. And she's praised for it. And she saved her husband. He was the only one who was not swallowed when the punishment came. So the question is, she was a regular Jewish woman. You know, every Jewish woman in this generation was not a plain Jewish woman, but in comparison to Korach and the other people that joined him, she was on a regular level. They were high, high level people. And she understood that it's not the right thing to argue against Moshe and Aaron. She told her husband via the logic that she used, don't join. How is it that Korach and the other people who were with him, and as we'll see, they were also on a very high level, didn't see what a simple person saw, what a simple woman could see. She had clarity about it. She had no problem seeing it, and they didn't see. Very difficult to understand. Rashi, in fact, when he interprets what Moshe told them after they disputed him in Pasuk Daled, Rashi says the following. Rashi says, when Moshe spoke to the people, they were not fools, says Rashi. They were not fools. How come that they did what they did? What led them to this mistake? The same with Korach. Rashi quotes what our sages say, Korach shepikeach haya. Korach was a very wise person, a very smart person. Mara aleshtutzo. What caused him to do something that is so foolish? We don't understand it. Let's add to it what the Torah tells us at the end of Parashat Be'alotcha, when Moshe and Aharon and Miriam spoke against the fact that Moshe separated from his wife. They meant well, but they still spoke against what he does, right? So Hashem tells them, Moshe is not like you, and you cannot draw conclusions from who you are and what is right for you to who Moshe is and what's right for him. Because Moshe is on a separate level, different level. In page 795, I want to tell you what Hashem says about Moshe. Verse number 7, right? Hashem says about Moshe the following. Not so, is my servant Moses. So first he's called a servant of Hashem, but he's already a very high level of being connected to Hashem. And then he says, in my entire house, he is the trusted one. So Hashem says, Moshe is trusted. Bechol beiti ne'eman hu. And Korach was not foolish. The other people who were with him in this dispute weren't foolish as well. So how is it that a simple woman understood very clearly to the extent that she took an extreme action in order to save her husband? They didn't, and they ended up in such a horrible way. So we have to understand what's going on here and how did it come to such a point? Who was Korach? Why did he come with this argument? Who were the other people who joined him? What caused them to join him and challenge Moshe and Aaron, ask for being a Kohen? Didn't they know that whatever Moshe does, Hashem tells him to do? That Moshe doesn't move without an agreement from Hashem, and everything he does is really because Hashem told him to do so? Obviously, it's a very difficult story. And as with other stories of sins, of wrongdoings of people in this generation, we'll explain it based on what commentaries say, but all of them also indicate that this is what we understand about the story, and this is what we can learn from the story, and that's why we learn it. But really to know what went on there, really don't. It's people, these are people of such a level that their way of thinking, their connection to Hashem, what initiated their actions, are not things that we can understand and can relate to. But the Torah wrote a story for all generations, because there is a lot to learn from it. And we approach this story in the past. It's most of the parasha. We have many classes about it on our website. I want to give another direction, another angle today. And obviously all of them are too, because human beings are complex. And there are different layers of realities that are taking place at the same time. And only the combination of all of them give us the full picture. So we want to start with Korach, who was the initiator of the whole story. And then we'll go to the others. What was Korach's argument? He wanted to be a high priest, a Kohen Gadol. Who was he? He was a Levite. As we said, on a very high level, there were three families of Levites: Kehat, Gershon, and Merari. The family of Kehat was the family that carried the things that were inside the Mishkan, the Ark, the Mizbeach, the Menorah, the things that stood inside the Mishkan, in the Holy of Holies and in the Holy. This was the highest or the most holy part of the mission of the Levites. And in within this family, carrying the ark was the highest, because the highest level of presence of Hashem was on top of the Aron. The Torah was in the Aron, the tablets were in the Aron. And to carry it, a person had to be very, very holy. In fact, the ark carried those who carried it, meaning it was not any physical effort. They were lifted up by the Aron, but they had still to hold it on their shoulders. There were sticks that were inserted into the Aron, and they carried it on their shoulders. And Korach was one of them. So we can easily say that Korach was one of the greatest people in the most righteous tribe in the Jewish nation, the tribe who did not get involved in the golden calf, the tribe of Levi. So a very, very high level people. What bothered him? He knew all that Moshe does is because Hashem told him to do. So what's his argument? So let's see his words, what he tells Moshe, and we'll interpret it in a way that will clarify for us a little bit why he got involved. So if you look at verse number 3, What Korach told Moshe is the following. They gathered together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, so let's see what's the argument. It is too much for you, meaning that you are the leaders of the Jewish people and the only leaders of the Jewish people, at least on this level of leadership. That's too much for you. For the entire assembly, and that's the statement I want you to pay attention to. For the entire assembly, all of them are holy, and Hashem is in them. Why do you exalt yourselves over the congregation of Hashem? So what does he say? They are all holy. You are holy. Aharon, you are holy. That's why you are a Kohen. Moshe, you are holy. That's why you are the leader of the Jewish nation. But we are all holy. Hashem is in the midst of us. So why you out of everybody else? Why do you extol yourself over the people? Meaning they blame Moshe and Aaron with the exact things that they were exactly opposite of what they were blamed for. Hashem said about Moshe, Vayim Aish Moshe Anav Me'od Mikol Adam Al Pnei Adama. Moshe is the person who is the most humble from all people on earth. And here they blame them for arrogance. You make yourself the top. We are all holy. Why do you do it? Now, Hashem said Moshe is trusted among all the people. So Korach is arguing Hashem. He said he didn't have even one thing at the age of 130. He was on such a level that the Ark did not reject him. So what does he say here? So obviously we have to understand what's going on here. What Korach told Moshe Rabbeinu is, Hashem is in the midst of all of us. How does he know? Because they all stood at Sinai, and they all heard Hashem saying, I am Hashem, your God. Right? Hashem spoke to all of them. They were all on a very, very high level of prophecy. Prophecy is usually given to people who are totally head and above, right? And besides, they heard that Hashem says, I am Hashem, your God, right? They saw a revelation at Sinai that only very high level people can contain. So why are you putting yourself in a place thinking that you are more than us? Still at Mount Sinai too, Moshe was given permission to go up on the mountain, and the rest had to stay not on the mountain, but next to it, with a different distance from the mountain. So obviously Hashem indicated that there are levels. Yes, the whole Jewish nation is holy and Hashem is in the midst of them. But still, Moshe is Moshe, Aharon is Aharon. The 70 elders are another level, and the rest of the people are another level. And there are in the Jewish nation, Israelites, Levites, and Kohanim. And that's what Hashem structured. It's not the structure that was put by Moshe. So what's his argument? Let's go back to what they heard on Sinai, the argument that Korach says. Korach says, we all heard, Anochi Hashem, Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God. In English, we cannot see it because we say you for one person in the singular, and we say you also in plural when it's a group of people. Not so in Hebrew. In Hebrew, Elokecha is your God in singular, and Elokechem is your God in plural. And Hashem on Sinai spoke in the singular language. I am Hashem, your God. What meant, says Korach, that any one of us has the same potential spiritually, and I can be a Kohen too, a high priest also. The same as Aharon can be a high priest. And Korach knew himself, he was very righteous. He was great, great, great on his level, and basically could really maintain the position of being a high priest. Now, this generation cared about one thing, and this was getting closer to Hashem and higher spiritually. And Korach could not withstand a possibility of having a potential for greater spiritual level, greater spiritual closeness to Hashem, and being blocked from it. It was very hard for him. It's the same as the Jewish people at Sinai when Hashem told them that they cannot touch the mountain and they cannot go up the mountain. It wasn't an easy commandment to fulfill. The Jewish people did it, but it wasn't easy because they were hungry for closeness to Hashem. So Korach said, Hashem said, I'm Hashem, your God, in the singular, which means I have the same potential. It cannot be that I'll be excluded. But still, it's very hard to understand. He said right after, why do you exalt yourself over the Jewish people? Didn't he hear that Hashem said that Moshe is the most humble person on earth that ever existed and ever will exist? So how does he say to Moshe, you are arrogant, you are putting yourself above the people? Obviously, even though he came from a place of desire for spiritual greatness and closeness to Hashem and was a very, very high level person, but there was a mistake there. There was something foolish here. And that's what our sages say, Korach shepikeach haya. Rashi quotes it, Korach that was a very smart person, a very wise person. How did he do something so foolish? What brought him to do something so foolish and see how he ended up? So we understand where Korach came from. Before answering the question, I want to go to the other people who joined him and see what motivated them. So right after we are told, okay, in the same Pasuk, Pasuk Bet, right, it says as follows, they stood before Moses with 250 men from the children of Israel, leaders of the assembly, those summoned for meeting men of renown. So again, the Torah uses such words to describe who they were, the greatest people. And they are told that they were the heads of Sanhedrin. We know that there were Jewish courts in the desert, as there are in any Jewish community. There is a Sanhedrin, right, which is the highest Jewish court, right, the high court. And they were members of Sanhedrin, meaning they were great, great people. What brought them to join Korach? So we are told that these 250 people were firstborn people, Bechorim. As we all know, originally, the Bechorot, the firstborn of each family, was supposed to serve Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash, to do the job of the Leviim and the Kohanim. But after the golden calf, being that they were involved in the golden calf, and the only tribe who wasn't was the tribe of Levi, this privilege of being those who serve in the Beit HaMikdash as Leviats and Kohanim, it was taken away from them, and it was given to the people of the tribe of Levi. So again, there was a very high level of closeness to Hashem that they possessed to start with, firstborn. They were supposed to be Leviats and Kohanim, people who have a soul of a different level, higher soul. And it was taken away from them and given to the tribe of Levi. So obviously, they felt bad about it. Even though we are told that they gave it over to the Leviats and gave it over with acceptance because they understood that they lost the privilege and it goes to the Leviats and it's justified. Still, they missed it very much. It wasn't easy for them. So when Korach came with arguments against Moshe and Aaron, they joined. But they did not realize that what causes them to join is the fact that they were pushed away from being Bechorot. What they understood, when the mission of being a Kohen and a Levi was taken away from them, they interpreted it in the wrong way. It reminds us the way the brothers of Yosef interpreted the fact that Yosef was given recognition by his father that they did not get. How did they interpret it? They thought that the same way that Abraham had two sons, Yitzhak and Ishmael, and Yitzhak was chosen to continue the Jewish people, and Ishmael was pushed away, and the same way that Yitzhak had two sons, Yaakov and Esav, one continued to build the Jewish nation, and Esav was pushed out. They thought that by taking away from them the privilege of serving in the Mishkan, they were pushed away from the closeness to Hashem. And there was nothing that could hurt people in this generation more than this. And they joined Korach by saying, "We all are holy, we, all of us, to the Sinai." To all of them, Hashem spoke and spoke in the singular, which means it doesn't exclude any of us. How is it that you exclude us? So we understand what caused them to join and why they are coming to argue with Moshe. What we don't understand is, yes, we understand the emotional part, we understand the spiritual desire, but wasn't it clear that what Moshe does is because Hashem tells him? The wife of Onben Pelet understands it, and they don't. After all, it is a shtut, it is a foolishness. It is foolish to do it. It's a foolish argument for Korach and for these people. What caused them to act in such a foolish way that they paid such a price for? I want to explain two things. First, I want to explain that it's possible that even the wisest of people will lack clarity and won't see things that are very simple to see and understand. How does it happen? How does it happen? So the Rebbe of Rajamin explains an idea. I saw it also by Rav Dessler from another angle, but the same idea. And this is the following. When Hashem created us, and we mentioned it in the past, He created us with free choice. 50-50. 50% of possibility to do the right thing, 50% of possibility of strength, of energy to do the wrong thing. And a person has to choose. But our choices affect the balance. If a person commits a sin, it affects the balance, and now it won't be 50-50, but it might be, let's say, 55 negative pull for negativity, and only 45 pull for positivity. In other words, it blocks the ability to see clearly. And it doesn't matter how smart a person is, and what his intellectual capacity, and how simple the facts are, if he committed a sin, it blocks his vision, and it might be very, very hard for him to see clearly. What with people who commit many sins, we'll soon answer. But before we go there, the Torah tells us about the 250 people that this is what caused them not to see. Okay? The Torah describes them as ha'anashim achataim benafshotam, people that made something wrong, that made their soul not as pure and not as good as it was before. It's on page 8:27, chapter 17. Okay, verse number 3. There describes these sinners against their souls regarding to the 250 people. Sinners against their souls, meaning they did something that affected their souls, blocked their ability to see. How did it happen? They were very high. Not on the level of Korach, who was totally pure to the extent that Aaron could tolerate him. People sin, even very great people commit sins sometimes. So being that they committed sins before, or even one sin before, it blocked their vision, and it was easier to convince them when they had a motivation, as we explained before, that they'll join with Korach. So we understand them. But what blocked Korach? As we said, Korach was totally righteous. So the sages tell us that his vision made him commit a mistake, do a mistake. What did he see that caused him to make a mistake? The past was pure, but he saw something about the future. Korach was on a very high level, as we said, and he had Ruach HaKodesh. He was able to see the future that regular people don't see. And he saw that in the future, Shmuel will come out of him. And on Shmuel, we are told in Psalms that he was on the level of Moshe and Aaron together. And he saw many Kohanim coming out of him. And he said, if this is the case, obviously, I'm right in my argument. So the 250 people lost clarity because of what they did in the past, even though they were very high level people, but they were not totally pure. So their vision was blocked. Korach was blocked, but by what he saw about the future. The past was pure, but he saw that in the future, people will come out of him that are compared to Moshe and Aaron. So obviously he has this greatness that should give him the ability to be a Kohen, a high priest. So this is how they explained it to themselves. Okay, this is what caused them not to see clearly. If they would have been aware that something blocks them, they were very God-fearing people. They would never dispute Moshe Rabbeinu. Sometimes we too have motivations that are not clear to us. And we act thinking that we are right, when in reality, we have a subconscious motivation that we are not aware of. So what did they say, logically speaking? They came to Moshe and Aaron, they said, we want to be Kohanim. Hashem pointed Aaron as a Kohen. So what was their argument? So there were two ways of leading the Jewish people. One that Moshe saw as the right one. And obviously, because it was Moshe who indicated what Hashem wants, it was the way Hashem wanted the Jewish people to be led. And there was the way that Korach and these people felt is right in terms of leading the Jewish people. Two schools of thought. Moshe had one way. Korach and his people believed that this is not the right way to lead the Jewish people. They wanted a different way of leadership of the Jewish people. So they had a logical argument. What did they say? What's the difference between the two? Moshe believed that all of the Jewish people are the people of Hashem. All of them have the possibility and the potential to connect to Hashem on a very high level. But there are differences between people. There are כהנים, לוויים, ישראלים. There are people who are born with high level souls and people who are born with souls that are not as high. Let's take, for example, the soul of Moshe. The moment Moshe was born, it's written that the whole house where he was born was lit up with the spiritual light. So obviously he had a soul that was prepared, pre-prepared for the role that he had to later on fulfill, to be the one to give the Torah and lead the Jewish people. So he had a very high soul. Other people were not born on this level. So there are different levels in the Jewish people, but all of them can be connected to Hashem. How? There is a structure to the Jewish nation. There are the people, and there is the leadership. The leaders in the Jewish people are supposed to be the greatest people. Moshe, Aharon, Miriam, the 70 elders, the heads of the tribes, people of a very, very high level. And the top is the high priest and Moshe Rabbein. Later on, later generation, the high priest, the king, right? There were always leaders in the Jewish people that were at the top. Their job was to draw holiness from above, and because they were on a very high level, they were the right vessel to draw holiness and bestow it towards the Jewish people. So if all of the Jewish people accepted them as leaders and listened to what they said and followed their advice and their instructions, they all together were elevated to be connected to Hashem. But there were leaders, and there were Jewish people, regular Jewish people. There was a hierarchy. Because there is such a concept of Klal Israel, the Jewish nation, all of the nation, and Hashem chose all of us and wants a relationship to all of us. And there are always enough people in within the Jewish people who invest in the connection to Hashem that make the nation as a whole deserve the closeness, even if there are people who don't do their job. The Jewish nation as a whole has a power and is wanted and chosen by Hashem, and it will never be changed. Even though there are different levels. And what enables it to happen? The leadership. If this is the case, shouldn't Hashem say in the Ten Commandments, I am Hashem, your God, in the plural, Anochi Hashem Elokechem, in the plural? Why did Hashem say, I am Hashem, your God, Elokecha, in the singular? So what commentators explain is that when we know that there is such a thing as leaders to bestow holiness, and there is such a concept of the Jewish nation as a whole that is always righteous in front of Hashem, a person might feel that he doesn't have to put so much effort in actualizing his potential. So Hashem spoke in the singular. I am Hashem, your God. Every one of us has to do the utmost that we can according to the tools that were given to us, the level of soul, the time we were born, the family we were born to, the means that were given to us in order to connect to Hashem. It might be that in objective terms, there will be people who are higher than us because they started from a higher place. They had better means. But as long as we did the utmost that we can with what we were given, we are what we are supposed to be. And we are part of the Jewish nation. And when we submit ourselves to our leadership, we all can become part of the high level of closeness to Hashem. Meaning the fact that there is a general entity called the Jewish nation as a nation with the leaders at the top doesn't exclude me from my responsibility. So that's why Hashem said, I'm Hashem, you God, you as an individual. But it doesn't exclude the concept, doesn't nullify the concept of the Jewish nation as a whole. And that's why, whenever the Jewish people committed a sin, and Hashem wanted to kill all of them, as it was after the Egel, as it was after the Meraglim, the spies, Moshe prayed for them and saved them all. If in front of Hashem said, these are your people, all of them. And how did he gain the forgiveness? By the fact that he also guided the Jewish people to do tshuva. Okay, so this was Moshe's way of leading the Jewish people. And he really put a lot of effort into elevating the Jewish people, teaching them Torah, and also leading them to tshuva in case that they did something wrong, so they'll gain forgiveness, and the Jewish nation as a whole will start again and continue in his mission. Korach and his people said, no, that's not right. Every one of us is capable and has to achieve the highest level on its own. And those who don't should bear the consequences. Meaning we are all holy. We all have the potential as individuals. That's why Hashem said, I'm Hashem, your God. There isn't such a thing as the Jewish nation as a whole is okay, is righteous in the eyes of Hashem. So there is room also for the wicked. And with some guidance, they can become part. No, every one of us bears at the utmost responsibility. We have to work very hard. And those who work very hard should be at the top. Meaning we don't need leaders who will bring the holiness down to this well. Each one of us can do it. Kol ha'edah kulam kedoshim. All of us are all holy. We have the potential. If we work hard, we can be there. And Korach, who knew that he actualized his potential and got to levels of spirituality that are way, way, way above, he deserves to be a high priest. This was his argument. This was also the argument of the 250 people. We deserve it. We don't need Moshe and Aaron. And not that they said that Moshe and Aaron were not chosen by Hashem. Yeah. But the way they lead a nation is not the right way. Not the right way. If the Jewish people commit sins, Moshe should not pray for them. Let them do tshuva, pray for themselves, and bring themselves back to wherever they have to be. It's not free. We want to achieve back home. It seems like a very logical argument. And in effect, there is a point in what Korach says. This is really the ultimate goal, that everyone will deserve on his own. But in order to get there, we need help. We need leadership. That's what the Torah tells us. Rashi brings it in Bereshit, that Hashem wanted to build a world with the attribute of justice, meaning that everybody will get what he deserves, period. No help. He was given the means, let him work and get it. But Hashem saw that it cannot exist. And as long as the process of growth is taking place, we need help. That's why we need leadership. A time will come after the resurrection of the dead where everyone will really have what he deserves. But at the moment, we have help from the leadership. If we submit ourselves to them, if we accept upon ourselves to listen to our leaders, to the greatest in the nation, and follow what they tell us, they elevate us, and via them, we become higher. And that's the structure of the Jewish nation. Because Hashem doesn't want even one Jew to be excluded, regardless of what he does. It's a famous promise of lo idach mimeno nidach. There isn't such a thing as a Jew will get lost. A person has always a spark of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov in him. And no matter what, it will be ignited one day. We hope it will be ignited by our choices. If not, it's coming through difficulties that we face or other things, right? But None of us will be lost. And this was the approach of Moshe. That's why he prayed for the people. That's why he was even ready to give away his life. Moshe told Hashem, if you don't forgive them, erase me from your book. Then I didn't fulfill my mission. My mission is to bring all of them to you. So Korach came with the wrong argument, for the time being at least. As we said, after the resurrection of the dead, it will be the right approach, but not now, not in the process. And Moshe explained it to him, explained it also to the people. It's written that Moshe told them, let's try out what Hashem wants to tell us about it. He told the 250 people, tomorrow, all of them will bring a ktoret on the Mizbeach. A ktoret is a job that only the high priest can do. And if it's somebody else who comes to do it, he dies on the spot. So he said, let's do it. All of you will bring ktoret. And Hashem will prove who is the high priest and who not. And he told them, no, we have only one Torah, one God, one Mizbeach, and one high priest. So you are really risking your life. You are 250 people. Let's say that even a high priest will be chosen from you. It will be one out of 250. And 249 will die. How comes that they went ahead and did it? And really died, all of them. As we said before, we weren't foolish. Korach wasn't foolish too. We understand the concept of the leadership that they came from, that they came with. But Moshe explained, it's not the time yet for it. And deep down, there was the motivation that caused them blindness and brought them to it. If they would submit Moshe to themselves to Moshe and listen to his rebuke, they would be saved. Their problem was that they were not, that Moshe was not capable of bringing them to what he brought the Jewish people after previous sins. The Jewish people committed the sin of the egel, the sin of the spies. Hashem wanted to annihilate them. Moshe achieved forgiveness. How? He brought them to do tshuva. Here, there was no way to achieve it. Because when a person is 100% sure that he is right, he's not going to do tshuva. Korach was so convinced that he is right, and so the 250 people. And it came from the greatness. They wanted closeness to Hashem. But they were so determined to get it. And they were fooled, the 250 by previous sins. Korach by what he saw in the future, that they did not listen to Moshe, even though the Torah said that Moshe is the leader and is the trustworthy one. And when a person is 100% sure that he is right, how could he do tshuva? And this is what caused them to die. Now, it all came from the fact that they wanted more closeness to Hashem, to become a larger vessel, to bring down holiness to this world. Something very beautiful. They felt they are removed from a potential that can be open to them. And they couldn't bear it. They were hungry for closeness to Hashem. Moshe did there something that he never did. Not only didn't he pray for them, but he asked for a punishment that was supernatural, that the earth will open up itself and swallow them. And it was a horrible story. The earth opened up in one place, and wherever the people of Korach were standing, they were pulled towards this hole and swallowed by it. Horrible. They and all of their possession. There was one, not one needle, our sages say, that belonged to them, that was not swallowed into the hole in order of the Jewish people's salute. Why did Moshe, who was ready to give away his life for the Jewish people, asking Hashem for it? Because to believe that Moshe is a prophet on a level that nobody can be at is the basis for our belief in the fact that the Torah is truth. Because if there could be somebody on the level of Moshe, he can come tomorrow and say, Hashem didn't say this, Hashem said something else. So there must be one person who is on a level of prophecy and greatness that nobody can dispute. And being that this was disputed now, it was a danger for the belief in Torah and in its truth. And that's why Moshe asked for it, because the Jewish people had to see it. Now, after these people died, right, the 250, Hashem wanted really to annihilate the Jewish people. There was a plague that started. And Moshe told Aaron, take a ktoret, run in between the people who are dying. And this started the plague. But many people were killed. 14,700 people died in this plague. Then Hashem tells Moshe to do something very interesting. He said, take a stick from the head of each of the tribes. And each head of tribe should write the name of the tribe that he is the head of on the stick. So there were sticks, one written on it, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, right? Sticks, each one for one tribe, right? Including a stick of the tribe of Levi, and on it will be the name of Aaron. Okay? And Hashem said, put it in Ohel Moed, in front of the ark. And the person that I will choose, that I chose to be the high priest, his stick will grow fruit. I want you to see the Pasuk. It's on page 831. Okay, verse number 2. Hashem tells Moshe the following. No, it's not 2, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's 20. Sorry, 20. Okay? It shall be that the men whom I shall choose, as Kohen, right? His staff will blossom. Thus I shall cause to subside from upon me the complaints of the children of Israel, which they complain against you. So Hashem says, one of the sticks, just one, will blossom. And this will indicate that this head of tribe was chosen by me to be the Kohen. And in this way, the complaints of the Jewish people will subside. Hashem killed already Korach and all the people that were involved with him. Why do we need it? How will this subside the anger of the Jewish people, the frustration? Why this? So I saw a beautiful, beautiful explanation that says the following. A stick that is cut off from the tree can't grow anymore, right? It's a connection to the roots that makes a stick grow. So for the stick to grow altogether is a miracle. Now, what will it grow? I want you to see verse number 23, when the Torah describes the stick of Aharon as the one that blossomed. And it's more detailed than the previous pasuk. So 23, the Torah says, on the next day, Moses came to the tent of the testimony, and behold, the staff of Aaron of the house of Levi had blossomed. And now see the details. It brought forth a blossom, sprouted a bud, and almonds ripened. So it gives us details. three things. It blossoms, what means flowers, right? Then it sprouted the buds, and then fruit. Why does the Torah tell us all these details? Three stages. So commentaries explain that these three stages indicate Kohen, Levi, and Israel. Or Israel, Levi, and Kohen, if you want to go by the order of the pasuk, meaning flowers, Israel, buds, Levi, and fruits, Kohanim. What's the idea? The idea is the following. Why do we plant a fruit tree? What do we want? We want the fruits. That's the main thing. That's the best part of the tree. For this, we plant it. But there are flowers too. There are leaves too. There are branches too. There are buds before we have fruits. And then they fall. The flowers fall. And then the fruit comes up. So it's a parable to what happened here. Originally, the Bchorim, the firstborn, were supposed to be the Kohanim, the fruits, the most desirable in terms of the service to Hashem, serving Hashem in the Mishkan itself. They committed the sin of the golden calf, and they fell like the flowers. They fell. They are not there anymore. And then comes out the fruits, the Kohanim, who are the tree, who are the fruit. They do the same. When the Leviats saw it, they felt, as we said before, that they are rejected, unwanted, and they cannot achieve heights of closeness to Hashem as the others. So this story can make them feel, because what does it tell them? Yes, the fruit is the most desirable part, but can the fruit grow without a stick, without branches? Can it grow without flowers? Can it grow without buds? Impossible. They are all needed in order to create the fruit. And that's why we look at the tree as a whole. Because the tree is taking part all its, on all, with all its parts in creating the fruit. And it's as important to have the flowers and the buds and the branches and the roots as it is to have the fruit, because one cannot exist without the other. What he tells us is the following. We are all born with our unique set of means that via them we can get close to Hashem. And yes, there are people on a higher level. Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the whole house was lit. Somebody once asked the Sfat Emet, how does one get to the level of the Sfat Emet? He said, I was born on the mountain. Who were his parents? What education did he get? What type of soul did Hashem grant him? This is all predestined by Hashem. But we are all necessary and all connected to Hashem, if we just follow the structures that Hashem wants for us. It doesn't matter if we are an Israel or a Levi or a Kohen. If we fulfill the utmost that we can via the means that were given to us, we will be as close to Hashem as the greatest of people. And we have to understand that the structure was set up, that the holiness comes via the leadership. Till today, the Kohanim bring holiness into the nation via their blessing. Why did Hashem structure it in this way? He knows. Doesn't matter for me. This has the potential to come down. People like Korach, people like the 250 people, and every Jew looks at other people and say, ah, big deal that the other people are great. See the what they got in order to be able to be them. Doesn't matter. Hashem gave me the job of being a branch or a trunk or a root or a flower or a bud or a fruit. I can do it right and I can do it wrong. There are fruits that are not good. There are flowers that are beautiful, right? To what extent am I beautiful? To what extent am I the right vessel for holiness? I can determine. Where do I start from? Doesn't matter. But I can end up in the same place as the greatest of people if I just fulfill my job. That's one of the lessons that this story of Korach is teaching us. And it takes away the jealousy, takes away the comparisons that we make between ourselves and others, and find it as the way to excuse ourselves for not doing what we are capable and supposed to do. Okay, I'll finish here and open to questions. By the way, somebody asked me, Elke, you asked me last time about the vessels from the Mishkan, if they were taken to the Beit HaMikdash or hidden. Only the Aron was taken for the Mishkan to the Beit HaMikdash. The rest was hidden. Okay, let's open to other questions.
Before we open, I want to announce that class is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas Shifra Bat Esther Chaya and Meira Chaya Nechama Bracha Bas David Mordechai. Open for questions.
Okay. All right,
you
question.
Should be able to unmute yourselves.
Thank you, Rebbe Simcoe, and I appreciate the answer.
Sure.
Hi, Rebbe Simcoe.
Hi.
This is so incredible. What I'm getting from what you said, really, like the themes of the parasha seem to be teshuvah and clarity of vision. And I was thinking to myself that this whole idea that first of all, that vision and tamas are connected. I had seen something that in Sefer Hayetzira that vision and the month of Tammuz are connected. And I also was thinking the fact that the almonds are like the shape of the eyes, and at the end of the parasha, the almonds
very nice
specifically. And I was also thinking, you said it's the leadership who has the vision, and the leadership is actually called Einei Ha'eda. So they
right.
have that vision. And the last thing I was thinking of was that I heard an acronym for the Chodesh Tammuz of Teshuvah, Azriza Makdimim Va'oshim Teshuvah. So it seems that even in Tammuz, the fact that Korach, Parshas Korach is read in Tammuz seems to have the theme of Teshuvah in it. There seems to be a lot of connections, and I never saw it through that lens, so I wanted to thank you. That's it.
Sure, you brought us some very beautiful connections. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, so have a good week. Next week, we have the last class for the season, and then we come back in September in Yom Tzashen. So I'll see you in a week in Yom Tzashen. Kol tov.
Bye. Thank you, Robinson.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was wonderful.
Amazing.
Thank you.